Hey there, welcome to LSAT Demon Daily. I'm Ben Olson, that's Nathan Fox. We're the founders of LSATdemon.com and our weekly podcast, Thinking LSAT. We have an email here from Chris, who has a 3.03 GPA in a biology major.
Is there a generalized numerical bonus that admissions would add on to my original GPA, such as plus 0.2? Considering the difficulty of the classes that I took, as opposed to something, in my opinion, easier, like poli-sci classes. Shots fired. From my understanding, this is something that I would have to talk about if I were to be given an interview. I mean, not all law schools, in fact, a minority of law schools even do interviews. I've heard that I guess there's some schools are starting to do them that weren't doing them before, but most law schools just don't even interview you at all.
Yeah.
That seems like a kind of a curious thing to bring up here. Like, why do you care that you're going to have to talk about it if you were given an interview? You're not meant to know. I mean, the answer to that question is no, right? Do we know that schools are just giving a plus anything to STEM majors?
I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if they were, because they're trying to normalize, right, all these applicants, and they want to differentiate easily between harder majors and so on. And
schools. It would make sense for them to do that. Yes.
Yeah. They probably do it by school, right? A chem major at Yale is probably going to get more credit for their GPA than a poli sci major at some no name school. But okay, we don't know what that number is. It's going to be different for every school. There's nothing you can do about it. You have your GPA. I'm not sure what to make. They're not going to ask you. They're not going to say, hey, by the way, we noticed that you have a biology major. What do you think about the fact that we're going to give you a 0.20 bump? Never going to come up.
It's not your business. I guess I'm struggling to understand this question. There's no need for you to have knowledge of what they do behind the scenes. Do they do that? I'm sure that they are thinking about it. I don't know that we have information about that in the form. Like, we do have the index formula, the index formulas that these schools use. And it doesn't have anything about STEM in there.
Nope.
But no. They might be doing a separate thing. I mean, maybe they have they could have a separate tab on their spreadsheet, you know, where they put all the STEM majors.
Yeah,
that's possible. I don't know. But the last line of this email says, am I doomed to be relegated to a bottom tier school, or do I still have a chance for something in the higher tiers like University of Georgia or Texas A&M? Ben is taken aback. Why?
Well, you could do even better than that. It's an interesting, like, you're placing yourself so low in this system. We don't know what your LSAT score is, but that could dramatically change your options. And also, look, a 3.03 is not a great GPA, but it's also not the worst. We've seen a lot lower.
They have. And you have a weird sense of law school tiers, because Ben and I think we have kind of three tiers.
Sure. Yeah.
Which is like Harvard, Stanford, Yale, and maybe a couple others.
Yep.
That's a tier. And then the remainder of the top 14 and
top 20,
maybe a couple others, kind of.
Yeah.
Fuzzy, very fuzzy margin there, especially very fuzzy. Both of those margins are super fuzzy.
Yep.
But I get the sense that, like, there's...
Yeah, there's the elite, right?
Yeah, there's then Yale.
Then there's
great. Like, UCLA.
National?
Yeah. National law. Still clearly a national law school that is not the Masters of the Universe that Harvard, Stanford, Yale is.
Yeah.
Okay. And then there's everything else, which is tier three. And it's really interesting here that Chris is talking about University of Georgia. The email says UGA and Texas A&M. And I thought that Chris was referring, I thought when I first scanned it, I thought it said UVA and Texas, which UVA is ranked what, like 8th or something? And Texas is ranked like 14th or 15th. They kind of go back and forth. But you weren't even talking, like in that context, I would have said, oh yeah, I think you totally have a case for Texas, like actual Texas, not Texas A&M. Texas A&M, looking at their 509 report, their median LSAT is 164. They're a fine law school, but they're not any kind of like elite law school by any means.
Yeah.
I mean, they're at best the second law school in Texas. I don't think I had ever thought about either of those schools before in 15 years of, like, I'm not sure I was familiar with the Texas A&M. I'm not sure I have ever talked about Texas A&M law school ever.
Yeah.
In 15 years of doing LSAT stuff and law school admission stuff full time. Same thing with University of Georgia. Have we ever thought about University of Georgia before?
I'm sure we've talked about them, but we just, not enough to remember.
Little better school there. Median LSAT of 168. But you know, it's not truly elite. And you can tell that by looking at the 75th percentile LSAT for both of these schools. 75th percentile LSAT for Georgia is 169. 75th percentile LSAT for Texas A&M is 166. And, you know, you're a STEM major. Assuming that 3.03 is because biology is hard and because there's not a lot of people who get like 4.0s in biology, you're the one who's taking shots at poli sci, you know? So like I grant you, like, yeah, sure. No, STEM is hard. Like, you have a BS, you took hard shit. You probably took organic chemistry. Poli sci majors tend not to do that. And so, whether they're going to give you like a formulaic numerical bump, I don't know, but I like your chances on the LSAT is what I'm trying to say. And so, like, I don't know, show up with a 170 and a 3.0, and I think you are going to be a very good candidate for these schools. Like Texas A&M, they see your application with a 170 and they go, holy shit, we don't get a lot of those. They look at your 3.0 and they go, well, that would normally be an auto deny for someone who had a 164. But this guy has a 170.
Yeah.
And then they look at your statement a little bit deeper and they see that you were a STEM major. Oh, they look at your application a little deeper. They see that you were a STEM major. And then they go, wow, okay, we got a splitter here, diamond in the rough. This is somebody who's going to lower our GPA profile, but raise our LSAT profile. And I have a feeling that if they had one to pick, you know, if they could only use one metric, do you think it would be LSAT or GPA?
LSAT.
I think so, too. I think they have demonstrated that that's what they would do. That's what I would do for sure.
Well, their index formulas give it more weight. We'll see what happens now that the ranking system has changed a bit, but I doubt that it's going to flip.
I'm guessing some schools don't even change anything, right? Like, I think the status quo inertia is very powerful. And I can see many schools just not even changing their index formula at all, given the new news or the new rankings or whatever. And if they do, I don't see anything that suggests that they're going to start all of a sudden weighting GPA more heavily. Why would they?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Employability. I don't think that GPA indicates employability any more than LSAT indicates employability.
Yep.
And biology major certainly does, though. So I think you're in good shape, Chris. You just need the right LSAT to, again, counterbalance that lower STEM GPA. And raise your sights. That's the first thing that Ben wanted to say.
Yeah.
Those schools are not so great.
Well, I want to go back to your three tiers, because now I've been thinking about it, right?
Okay.
So I have names. Okay, so the first one is elite. This is the top three, elite. Four, or five schools, right?
You Masters got the elite. Of the Universe, yes.
Masters of the Universe, okay. Then you have national schools, okay? And that's the top 20 or so. Maybe top 14 is a made up number.
Schools that it would be sensible to go to school out of state to go to that school.
Yes.
Like I don't know if it's just out of state. I guess it depends on where you live, because there's some places that like have no law schools. Or
but people from other states, even across the country, routinely say, oh, yeah, I know who there. You're talking about. Yep.
Yes.
Okay. So you got elite, you got national. And then I think you have, I mean, you could have a neutral name like regional, but I would say respectable local, respectable regional schools. They're anywhere from 20 to, and this is really fuzzy, but 50, 60, something like that. These are schools that are bumping up and down in the rankings, but they're still, they're up there and they're trying to chip away at the national scene, right? They're not there, but they're trying to. You go there, you also know that your chances of getting a job locally seem decent. Then there's, after that, and I don't know where bottom feeder starts, but there's some, you know, there's schools that have no ranking whatsoever, and I just don't think they should exist. And I could just call them everything else, but there's part of me that also wants to say, look, no, I think this is I don't know what they're doing, right? They're admitting people with extraordinarily low GPAs and LSAT scores, and I would just love to know what the employment statistics are for those schools. But for simplicity, we could just say elite, national, respectable, and then everything else.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can probably call them regional schools. I don't want to kill Southwestern Law School too hard. Ranked 141st in the country, mm-hmm. median LSAT of 154. I don't think anybody should go into a school like that with any illusions. I think like half of those people are never going to practice law. Comfortably, yeah. Half of those people are never going to practice law. And this is true of like half of the law schools.
Well,
it's
so
probably the case that like many, many people who go there are just not going to successfully become lawyers after it.
So at what point, at what percentage do you say, probably shouldn't exist?
Yeah, I just think it's nothing but fuzz at that point. It's like it's just too unclear of a boundary, because it just depends. I mean, there are people who go to Southwestern and totally kill it as attorneys. There are many, many people who go to Southwestern and don't kill it as attorneys. It depends. So those are the schools where I would only go to them if I could go for free, mm-hmm. for sure. You know, McGeorge. In Sacramento is a great example. That McGeorge, you know, that it has like great connections to the capital of the state of California. It's big business. Like there are people there who are serious. There are also people there who are never going to practice law and who are going to be miserable if they do. I know multiple people who went to McGeorge and hate their job as a lawyer.
Yeah.
And so that's not a good outcome. But I would say that McGeorge is a respectable regional school. It's just like that the region where its reputation carries is smaller. And even within that region, you know, the law firms in Sacramento that might be interested in McGeorge lawyers, they're not hiring the bottom of the class at McGeorge. They're hiring the cream of the crop at McGeorge. So I don't know that you call them bottom feeder. That's a little, I mean, they certainly are feeding on those people who are, you know, like McGeorge, since we're picking on them today, 50th percentile LSAT, 154, half of their class scored below a 154 on the LSAT. And like the job outcomes for those people, it's many of them will be okay, but many of them will be not okay trying to have some fancy lawyer job. It's just not going to happen for many of those people.
And it's so sad when you think how much they paid for that. It's
right. Yeah. McGeorge tuition, $57,000 a year. So, yeah, I mean, it's just like, should you pay $57,000 a year? Well, 88% of the people at that school are getting some kind of a grant 41% of those are less than half tuition. So you've got 12% of the class getting nothing at all. You've got 41% of the class who are paying at least half of that $57,000 a year. Then you've got 28% of the class who are there getting half to full tuition, and another 19% who are getting a full tuition scholarship.
Wow, 19. Well, yeah, check so this out.
It's just like, yeah. You know, it's the haves and the have nots. 12% of the people are paying full price. 19% of the people are paying nothing at all. And then there's this big middle where they're, you know, paying something to try to fund it a little bit. But the real unfortunate people there are the people who are paying full price at that school, because they probably have worse LSAT, worse GPA. Very sadly, they also tend to be underrepresented minorities footing the bill, which is tragic. Sorry, go tragic. Ahead.
No, but to add to your numbers, I'm on lawschooltransparency.com. I'm specifically looking at McGeorge. It says they have an employment score of 52.9%. What is the employment score? It reflects graduates with a successful start to a legal career, which means, according to Law School Transparency, long-term full-time jobs that require a law license other than solo practitioners. So 53% are getting those JD required jobs.
Might be that a little ungenerous because it doesn't count solo practitioners, but how many people really go directly into solo practice? I think that's pretty rare.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's like halfway. It's like, yeah.
But you also got to look at the distribution, right? Those 53% who are getting these jobs are among those who didn't pay.
Oh, and I'm sure that, you know, the law firms in Sacramento are doing on-campus interviewing at McGeorge, and they're sending out an email to the whole school saying, if you're in the top one-third of your class, you're welcome to apply for one of these interviews, or top quarter of the class, or top 10% of the class, depending on how fancy the firm is. They're going to be limiting it, saying like, yeah, I'm only taking the cream of the crop. So now you can go there with shitty grades, shitty LSAT, and kill it in your first year and get straight A's and get the Cali Award in every class. I don't know if that's only a California thing probably, but Cali Award is the highest grade in the class. You get an award, you put that on your resume. Yeah. It's possible. There are some people who go there with bad grades, bad LSAT for whatever reason, and somehow kill it in law school. That is possible, but it's the exception. And what's going to happen more often than not is somebody with a higher LSAT and a higher GPA is going to get that job. Back to the question, man, where were we? We were trying to come up with new tiers to talk about.
Yeah, that's all. And this person we think they should reach for higher tiers.
Yeah, I just think you should apply broadly. I mean, I think you should. You should use our scholarship estimator, lsatdemon.com/scholarships. Put your 3.03 in there and put your best LSAT in there and see what kinds of offers you could get and apply to a portfolio. You know, you don't put all your eggs in one basket. You apply broadly to see what kinds of offers come in. But yeah, I think you could aim a little higher, actually, Chris, than UGA and Texas A&M. I feel pretty solid. If you're assuming the right LSAT, I feel pretty solid about UGA and Texas A&M, actually. And I would probably apply a little higher than that with the right LSAT.
Yeah.
Cool. Email daily@lsatdemon.com if you'd like to ask us a question or share some LSAT or law school admissions news. Thanks for listening.